2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 7 through 12. Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all diligence and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love. For ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be rich. And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you, who have begun before, not only to do, but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that is, there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to that a man hath, and not according that he hath not. Paul has highly complimented the Macedonian churches for the act of liberality that they exercised toward the poor saints at the church at Jerusalem. And he mentions that out of their abject poverty, the joy that they possessed, knowing their relationship to God and Jesus Christ, that this all worked together, and they gave a gift, a liberal gift, a gift not prompted, a gift not out of competition, a gift that they even begged the opportunity to have taken and given to the people at Jerusalem. And it was a gift made out of sacrifice. And the gift is always large. If it is a sacrificial gift, it is never a large gift if it is not made in sacrifice. And now Paul desired the church at Corinth to have more than good intentions. In verse 11 he states, "Now therefore perform the doing of it." The goodness of an intention is seen only in its performance. We talk about having good intentions. Well, it's not a good intention unless it's performed. It's just an intention. I think we can say that an intention unfulfilled is a broken promise that's just waiting until its time. I don't know how long it takes a good intention to turn into a broken promise, but there is a process of metamorphosis where it will change from that good intention to simply a broken promise. I think Paul wanted the church at Corinth to understand that they were a good church. You know, sometimes we lose sight of that as we look into some of the problems that they were experiencing and some of the flaws and faults that Paul has written to them about. But he now states, I think, without reservation, that these are good people. They have some great qualities. And in verse 7, he mentions them. They were a church that had spiritual gifts and qualities that were complimentary, that were extraordinary, and they were people who abounded in what they did. Therefore, as you abound in everything, that is, these people seem to have an enthusiasm, literally. They seem to have a zest that whatever they did possess, they possessed in abundance. And he mentions some things that characterized the church at this particular time. Faith, as you abound in faith, they had a great faith, which means firm persuasion concerning those things that God has written. Utterance, that is, the word spoken. They had more than simple than faith. They had the desire and the ability to articulate that faith and speak it. You know, sometimes we say, well, I have faith, but I don't know how to talk about it. I don't know how to describe it. These people not only had faith, they had the ability to speak what they believed, utterance, knowledge, the understanding of a thing. And here, beginning to see, these people were people who could speak what they felt in their heart. They had knowledge, they had faith, and not just knowledge and faith and utterance, the ability to speak, but they were diligent, which means they did things with speed. It's a rather unique word that's translated diligent. It just means with speed. And that in itself means they wanted to do it. There was no reluctance. There was no manana type attitude in these people. There was, we want to do it. When do we get to do it? Instead of, when do we have to do it? It's a big difference in the attitude of, when do we get to do it? When will you allow us to do it? And urging the gift upon Paul, as the Macedonians did, take this gift now and take it to these people, and urging the gift upon Paul. It's the same word, diligence, zeal, and love to us, agape. They had a great love for Paul. And he says, now you abound in all of these things. See that you abound in this grace also. He wanted them to do more than their share. You know, a lot of times we stop short of displaying a particular grace in our lives because we want to know how much do we have to do in order to clear ourselves and to have said, now that's enough, that's our share. I know I've been guilty of saying, well, Southwest will do its fair share. Well, I think we do, but I think there is more to doing the will of God than simply our fair share. There ought to be an abundance of what we do so that there is no question about it. You know, when manna fell from heaven, it fell in abundance. Fell in abundance. And you could pick up more than you needed, but it wouldn't keep. You know, some way, somehow, the zeal, eagerness to do things, and then doing above and beyond our power and our measure speaks well of our commitment and of our heart in the sight of God. See that ye abound in this grace, that is, the grace of giving to the saints in Jerusalem. See that ye abound in this grace also. It's rather unique that Paul used these terms to describe the church at Corinth, faith and diligence and knowledge and utterance and love. I don't think we'd probably use these kind of words anymore to describe a good church. We probably wouldn't do it even to describe what we would call a good church member. If we're talking about a good church today, we'd probably talk about how many they had in Sunday school, the amount of offering they had, the kind of buildings they had, the kind of programs they offer. When we talk about, well, that's a great church. They have this many in Sunday school. They have this much offering. They have these programs. They have this great building. They have these fantastic. Yet none of these things are said of the Corinthian church. And the things that I've mentioned are not without importance, but they're certainly not the most important things in the life of a church. Rather than command these people to liberality, Paul challenged them. You know, because liberality is not something that's commanded. For when we give because of a command, then it ceases to be liberality and becomes obedience. For liberality cannot be commanded. Its nature demands spontaneity. If you think of your needs, you may give, but it will not be liberal. That is, if we count our coins before we give, if we say, now, we need X number of dollars and then divide us into that X number of dollars. You know, sometimes we're guilty of that, saying, well, we need $5,000. We got 20 families in the church. That means each family in the church should give X number of dollars. You know, when we do that, we kill the spirit of liberality. And then we become each person doing his fair share. The test, this word commandment, means express injunction of law. I agree with Brother Goodwin in what he preaches and what he teaches and the books that he has written concerning giving, and that is, law will always get you a smaller offering than grace. Anytime people give because they realize they're under and that the grace of God is in them and on them and about them, when people give motivated by the grace of God, the offerings will always be larger than one that's dictated by law. And Paul said this. Now, there was one test of liberality that Paul brought to their attention, and that was the Macedonian gift. But by occasion of the forwardness of others, the word occasion means a starting place, and forwardness means doing it earnestly with zeal. What Paul is saying is that if you will consider the Macedonian churches and them and their work, and this then can be a starting place for you. It can show you the kind of attitude that God expects us to have. And then their liberality would prove their love to be genuine, and to prove the sincerity of your love. This word sincerity is very unique. It means to be born in wedlock. That is, a child that's born to two people who have been legally married. The idea is that it is a love child born in legal marriage, as opposed to what some might call a love child. You know, sometimes we think if something is done in the realm of marriage, that it some way detracts from the love. But if two people are deeply in love and they're not married and they have a child, it's considered a true love child. Paul seems to indicate that the product of the Corinthians, if it was based on the example of the Macedonians and Jesus Christ, would produce a gift that was in the legitimate realms and would be marked as genuine. Not only would it exist, but it would have the mark of genuineness about it, and to prove the sincerity of your love. It would be a gift not only out of love, but within the confines of that which God has set. You know, sometimes we get the idea that if we feel something, we're compassionate. You might even cry watching a movie, or you might cry listening to a story that someone tells, or watching a particular television program. You might just cry, just literally weep, but that doesn't mean you're compassionate. Compassion means we do something. You know, the whole world weeps. I mean, we're all so terribly upset at these tragedies that occur, but we seldom ever do anything. Now, it doesn't take a great heart to weep over lost souls. That's a very easy thing to do. It is the person who, out of compassion, not only weeps but does something that shows and bears the sincerity of their zeal. Now, Paul said, look at Jesus Christ. For ye know, that is, you're knowledge. You have a knowledge of Jesus Christ. All of you are aware of the liberality of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich. Now, you can interpret that statement any way you want to. He was rich before he came to this world, and all the riches of this world were his, and he owned all things. He was rich. Yet for your sakes, he became poor. For the sake of humanity, he never claimed what was rightfully his. That's rather startling, isn't it? If a person, by their very existence, has a right to something totally legal, it's theirs, and then they don't claim it, then we can say that's a genuine self-imposed poverty. Yeah, I can't really claim that I gave up anything to be poor. I started out poor. You see, my poverty is not self-imposed. You can't say that I gave up so-and-so. I never gave up anything to be a preacher. Have you ever noticed our preachers talk about, well, I gave up being a doctor to be a preacher, and they never enrolled in med school? If you weren't a doctor, you didn't give up being a doctor, okay? Well, it says, I gave up being a senator to be a preacher. Well, were you a senator? No, but I was going to run. Well, you didn't give up being a senator, okay? I gave up cotton picking. That was my gift. That's what I gave up. I was a fruit tramp for a while. You know what a fruit tramp is? It means you go around picking vegetables and fruit. That's my primary occupation. High school graduate of Strawberry High School, class of 52. That's about what it qualified me to do. I didn't give up anything to be a preacher. So I can't say I gave up anything. I have far more now than I ever dreamed I would have. Even if I, quote, got a good job and succeeded, I have more than I ever dreamed I would have, that I ever thought I would have. Now, not so with Christ. His poverty was self-imposed. He could have claimed at any time everything. But Jesus said, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. His poverty was genuine, and it was self-imposed, and it was all the time. You know, you might think, well, he will impose poverty upon himself for a week so he can know what it's like to live. But his poverty was a lifetime of poverty. He literally experienced the giving up of his rightful claims to all things. And he didn't do it for the experience. He didn't do it for any reason except that he might make us rich. Now, there's liberality. That's the kind of liberality that the Macedonians had touched on, and that's the kind of liberality that Paul wants the Corinthians to have. That ye through his poverty, this word again means begging, want, need, literally not enough even of food to eat. The word rich means having an abundance of wealth. True liberality is not to conclude in intention. Paul said they had begun some time earlier, and they should now conclude, and herein I give my advice. That word advice means my opinion. For this is expedient, which means profitable to you. It's good for you. It will help you who have begun before not only to do but also to be forward a year ago. This word forward means to wish or to desire. And I think Paul is saying this. Here's my opinion. It is to your interest and your good to go on with this enterprise, for you started it last year. You were the first not merely to do anything, but to want to do anything. That is, you had desire and you started. Now you need to fulfill what you have begun. This word perform means to bring through to an end and to conclude. If they had simply had intentions, then they never would have had a gift to give. They were willing and therefore were able, and as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also out of that which you have. Now Paul is saying, but suppose there are some in the church who are saying, but we don't have anything. We wanted to give, and we started last year this fund, this special fund for the poor saints at Jerusalem, but now we've been stripped of all of our wealth. We don't have anything. How can we give if we don't have anything to give? And Paul solved that problem quite quickly. Readiness means a willingness. Performance means to bring through to completion. Willing and able. How we oftentimes make that statement. Willing and able. If you're willing, you are able. For the will is what counts. You say, no, that's not true. Well, Paul says it's true. For if there be first a willing mind, it is accepted according to the man hath, and not according to the hath not. And there are two examples of this truth. One of them is Jesus. And the other is the widow who gave mites. It's recorded in the book of Mark and also other of the Gospels, but Mark chapter 12. Verse 41, and Jesus sat over against the treasury, and behold how the people cast money into the treasury, and beheld, rather, how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and said unto them, verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. Perfect example of someone who had the will, and because they had the will, they could give abundantly and liberally. This widow gave liberally. And it wasn't according to what she had not, but according to what she had. You know, most of us are embarrassed if we can't give a lot. We feel like that rich people should do God's work, and that we should be exempt because we really don't have much. I don't think that the great bulk of God's work is done by wealthy people. The greater degree of the support of all things in the Lord's churches is done by people who give liberally, and they're poor people as far as the world's standards are concerned. Liberality. There are two essential truths in these scriptures for us. And that is, liberality is the mark of a true disciple of Jesus Christ. You know, Jesus said more about the right use of money than he did about heaven. That's the truth. Jesus had more to say about the right use of money than he did heaven. You know, our money and what we do with it really tells a lot about us. You really want to know something about your character, look at what you give to the Lord's church. And I'll tell you more about your character than almost anything else. You can't be stingy and be Christ-like. He said, well, I love the Lord and I believe all the doctrines, but do you give anything? He said, well, don't be stingy. It doesn't please our Lord for His people to be stingy. Be liberal. And don't simply have good intentions that when you get rich, you're going to give a lot to the church. You know, I've heard people say, well, Brother Penn, I don't have much right now, but God ever blesses me, I'm going to give a lot. Well, who wouldn't? I strike a bargain with God like that any day, won't you? I tell you, the first day God gives me $1 million, I'm going to give $100,000 to this church. Now I got $900,000 left, and then feds get through with it, I won't have that much, but I'll take that kind of deal anytime, folk, won't you? But what are you going to do if God doesn't bless you with $1 million? Well, I'll just wait here and grump till He gets to it. Get on with the giving, like Paul said. Perform the doing of it.